TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Shut down nuclear power plants. May 6 Coalition Rally Against Nuclear Power, held in Washington, D.C., spring 1979. 5 weeks after the accident at Three Mile Island in Pennsylvania on March 28, 1979, on a mere 3 weeks' notice, 70,000 determined people came to Washington, D.C. to call for the shutdown of all nuclear power plants. This is the second part of an amazing historic document that raises all the questions that confront us today. Nuclear reactors as ticking time bombs with potential for catastrophic accidents. Do we have the right to spread nuclear waste and nuclear radiation that will poison the planet tens and hundreds and even hundreds of thousands of years into the future? And also, how was it possible that this movement, so intelligent, funny, and determined, did not succeed in shutting down all nuclear power plants? Did we need another accident to make it clear how dangerous this technology is? Did we need a third one, Fukushima, to demand the shutdown of all nuclear power plants? I put that question to someone I like and respect and presented on TUC Radio many times, Mary Olson from NIRS. That's the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. And Mary Olson said that there is a huge unclaimed victory that we are being made to forget. As a direct effect of the rallies of 1979 that swelled to over 200,000 later that year, no new license for a nuclear power plant has been issued in the United States for 40 years. When the passionate response to the Three Mile Island accident began in early 1979, with the voices you heard in part one and in this segment, 400 nuclear power plants were either already built, under construction, licensed, or seriously planned. The victory of that time was that 98 nuclear power plants that were in the licensing process or even in the beginning stages of construction were never built. Of all those projects, only 120 plants eventually came online. That's a victory of 380 plants that were never built, plus a 40-year moratorium. That the first new license in four decades should be issued under Obama is a political and moral disgrace. However, as of today, as this is recorded in June 2012, the loan guarantees for the two new Vogtle reactors near Augusta, Georgia, have not yet been approved. And without loan guarantees and taxpayer insurance via the Price-Anderson Act, no nuclear power plant will be built in the U.S. because no investor, no bank or corporation will ever risk their money alone in such a dangerous project. In part one, you heard from Bella Abzug, John Goffman, Helen Caldicott, and Ralph Nader. Now you will hear from Jane Fonda, David Brower, Governor Jerry Brown, Dick Gregory, Grace Paley, Abby Hoffman, Kurt Vonnegut, and Barry Commoner, recorded by Pacifica Radio on the Capitol steps in Washington, D.C. in May 1979. On March 16, 1979, only 12 days before the nuclear accident at Three Mile Island, the first Hollywood movie about nuclear power was released. The China Syndrome is the story of the Ventana nuclear power plant outside Los Angeles. Television news reporter Kimberly Wells, played by Jane Fonda, and her camera crew witnessed the plant going through an emergency shutdown. The shift supervisor finds that a gauge is misreading and that the coolant is dangerously low. An exciting story of cover-up, whistleblowing, and police intervention follows. In the end, the crew manages to bring the reactor under control. The star of China Syndrome, actress and activist Jane Fonda, spoke at the May 6 coalition rally against nuclear power in 1979.
I want to just say a few words about the China Syndrome. The fact that the opening of the movie was followed so quickly afterwards with the disaster at Three Mile Island has led a lot of people and the press to say that this is an example of fiction anticipating reality. The exact opposite is true. The fiction has been the nuclear industry's decades of assurances that nuclear power is safe and necessary. The film, The China Syndrome, is a reflection of a reality which has existed in plants throughout this country for years. The stuck valves, the corroded pipes, the falsified radiographs, major construction problems, human error, workers being fired if they speak out, narrowly diverted disasters, all of these things are not rare occurrences, but have happened in plants all over this country for years. The problem is that they have been hidden from us by the nuclear industry and its friends on the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and by a succession of presidents, including Jimmy Carter. That is fact, not fiction. Many people seem astounded by the scene in the film China Syndrome, in which a scientist, in describing a major nuclear accident, says, and I quote, "It would render a state the size of Pennsylvania permanently uninhabitable." The fact is that that sentence comes directly from a little-known, hidden government study called WASH 740, which was prepared by the Atomic Energy Commission in 1965. That is fact. What is fiction is the Atomic Energy Commission telling us that they are protecting us, when in fact they hide from us the information that they have. The real message of the China Syndrome, the real message of Harrisburg, is that if we continue to place our health and safety in the hands of utility executives whose main goal in life is to maximize profits, then we will see more Harrisburgs, we will see more leaks, and we will see an increase in the cancer epidemic that is already running rampant in this country. The nuclear industry says that we cannot live without them. That is fiction. There are alternatives. That is fact. Mr. Schlesinger and Jimmy Carter says that their energy program will benefit the American people. That is fiction. Their energy policy will benefit the nuclear industry and the oil companies, and they have given only lip service to the solar industry. Putting James Schlesinger in charge of our solar program is like putting Dracula in charge of a blood bank. That is fact.
That was Jane Fonda. At that time, she was well known for her opposition to the war in Vietnam. There's a hidden connection between the screenwriter for The China Syndrome, Mike Gray, and Dr. John Goffman, the anti-nuclear chemist and medical doctor, who you heard in part one of this program. When Dr. Goffman died in 2007, his son received a letter of thanks from Mike Gray. He wrote that the film might never have come about had he, Mike Gray, not browsed a Los Angeles bookstore and found Goffman's seminal work on nuclear energy entitled Poisoned Power. Next up is Grace Paley, short story writer, poet, and activist. She had been arrested a year earlier as one of the White House 11. They unfurled a banner on the White House lawn that read, "No nuclear weapons, no nuclear power, USA and USSR. She taught at Sarah Lawrence College and was part of the American Friends Service Committee and the War Resistance League. She died of cancer in 2007. Hear part of her May 1979 speech, followed by a surprise encounter in the audience.
We're all here because our government has declared war on us. We can fight back, but it has also declared war over the head of history and over time on generations, on people who have not yet been born and who cannot fight back. We can fight back for them. This great, great gathering has happened because of the work of the May 6th Coalition, because of Harrisburg, but also because tens of thousands of you have already been working. I know that. And I've seen you, and I've seen the work that you were doing in Texas and in Montana, at Diablo Canyon, at Rocky Flats, in all of these places. You have already been working.
John Kalish is here, and he did an interview a little bit earlier, which I think I'd like him to tell you about.
Well, Celeste, as some of our listeners may know, Abby Hoffman has been living underground for close to 6 years now. Earlier today, I ran into Abby in the crowd, and we spoke about today's rally and the future of the No Nukes movement.
We've been fighting a proposed nuclear plant in our local area out there in the heartland for about 18 months now. I think at some point with $35 billion in the ground already in nuclear power and another $80 or $90 billion in the construction and planning state, that you're talking about type of energy that the ruling class wants to gather in for itself and centralize its power. So I think we're headed for a clash, and I think at some point people are going to have to put their bodies on the line.
That was Abby Hoffman, who was unable to speak from the stage because he was wanted by the police. Abby was co-founder of the famous Yippies, the Youth International Party. They combined fun with politics. And he was a co-defendant of the Chicago 7, accused of having incited a riot at the 1968 Democratic National Convention. Abby Hoffman died of an alleged suicide in 1989. Now you will hear from Dick Gregory, a professional comedian still very much alive today. Gregory was the first African-American who broke a peculiar color barrier. Before him, no black comedian was allowed to address a white audience. Dick Gregory never forgot the value and power of words and used his comedy routines on behalf of civil rights, against the war, nuclear weapons and power, and many more issues. Up to this day, he spoke to 70,000 people at the May 6 coalition rally against nuclear power, held in Washington, D.C. in 1979.
What we're doing here today is more important than the Vietnamese War. It's more important than dealing with racism, than dealing with sexism, than dealing with hunger, because I can feel hunger. I can see war. I can feel racism. I can feel sexism. I cannot see radiation. I cannot smell radiation. I cannot hear radiation. I look around one day and I am dead. Somewhere you have to. So I say to you today, when you leave here, you have to give radiation an odor. You have to give radiation a sound. So go back into your communities and be willing to go to jail if it comes to that, because I'd rather see you in jail with the jails filled up than the graveyards running over. We have a choice. We've been told that if we close the nuclear plants down, we'll have brownouts. We'll have blackouts. I would rather have brownouts and blackouts than people outs. And finally, I say to you, if we in this country have used up all of our legitimate energies, and the only way we can survive is with illegitimate energies, then I say go to bed at night when the sun goes down and wake up in the morning when it comes up. That's what it's going to come to. That's what it's going to have to come to.
That was comedian and also health promoter Dick Gregory. He's followed by Jerry Brown. He was then in his first 1974 to 1983 terms as governor of California.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jerry Brown.
The nuclear priesthood, which each day reels under the assault of its own lack of credibility and the rising risks of its own enterprise, will now seek to protect you and to protect the other people of this earth by imposing a police state tactic of surveillance, emergency preparedness, and protection incompatible with the fabric of our democratic society. I ask you now, when you leave here, think of the life, the sun, the breezes, the trees, the humanity that encompasses this meeting today. We are living and profiting off the addiction to nuclear power. It has become a pathological addiction in that it has made many feel good while storing up for generations to come evils and risks that the human mind can barely grasp.
That was Governor Jerry Brown in 1979. Elected again in 2011, Jerry Brown now is in his second round as governor of California. 43 years later, he's facing a nuclear power emergency of his own. 8 million people live in a 50-mile radius from the San Onofre nuclear power plant between Los Angeles and San Diego. In January 2012, San Onofre's steam generator tubing malfunctioned and the plant had to shut down. Governor Jerry Brown is being asked to direct the California Public Utilities Commission to call for replacing aging reactors at Diablo Canyon and at San Onofre with clean and renewable energy. Kurt Vonnegut was the author of Slaughterhouse-Five, Cat's Cradle, and Welcome to the Monkey House. He was a very early opponent of the war in Vietnam and wrote sharp and funny newspaper columns. He died in April 2011. At the May 1979 rally, he railed against the PR people. Kurt Vonnegut.
The so-called profession of public relations, an American invention, stands entirely disgraced today. The lies we have been fed about nuclear energy have been as cunningly handicrafted as masterpieces of Benvenuto Cellini. They've been a damn sight better built, I must say, than the atomic energy plants themselves. I say to you that the makers of such lies are filthy little monkeys. I hate them. They may think they are cute. They are not cute. They stink. If we let them, they will kill everything on this lovely blue-green planet with their rebuttals to what we say today, with their stinking, stupid lies.
Kurt Vonnegut. Next up is David Brower, who had been the first executive director of the Sierra Club. His famous falling out with the Sierra Club came over nuclear power. The club had played a major role in the blocking of the nuclear power plant at Bodega Bay, California, in the early 1960s. But that campaign had centered on the earthquake danger from the nearby San Andreas Fault, not from opposition to nuclear power itself. The club's board of directors had voted to support the Diablo Canyon site for that power plant in exchange for protecting the environmentally sensitive dunes south of San Luis Obispo. Brower had come to believe that nuclear power was a dangerous mistake at any location. When he publicly voiced his opposition to Diablo Canyon in defiance of the club's official policy, he was forced to resign. David Brower.
Some people catch on slowly, too slowly. I was pro-nuclear until I was 57. 10 years ago, I finally saw that the pro-nuclear people were not leveling with us about what they were going to do with their deadly waste. And they are still making the same pitiful promises about waste, about safety, about radiation, about their being clean, capable, and infallible. But we know better now, thanks in part to the providential accident at Three Mile Island. Providence saved Pennsylvania. The nuclear priesthood did not save it. At TMI, they proved they had devised a machine that could fool not only the operators, but also the instruments. They searched the country for a final resting place for that high-level nuclear waste and selected a spot that is at the junction of three earthquake faults. They are recommending that we send to the Philippines, not exactly a stable democracy, a reactor to be installed in a volcano next to a fault. They want us to pick up the tab for the TMI fiasco and to subsidize their nuclear disaster they hurry toward us here and abroad. They have delayed progress in the development of alternate energy and have preempted the capital that the society needs for health, education, housing, transportation. They have made us vulnerable to unprecedented sabotage or unprecedented restriction of civil rights if they take steps to avoid that sabotage. Thank you for being here, for your determination not to be the last people on Earth victims of nuclear proliferation, but to be the first along the soft energy path that's safe and that nuclear priesthood has tried to hide from us. First, shut down and write off the nuclear islands, the atomic fireplaces, the reactor vessels, and containment. Pay what it costs to boil water by other means when it must be boiled to make electricity. Find out what it costs to decommission a reactor. If the utilities complain that it will cost too much, thank them for letting us know at long last, and then let them get on with it. It will be cheaper than losing Pennsylvania.
That was David Brower, formerly with the Sierra Club and then founder and president of Friends of the Earth. Brower died in 2000. The last speaker is Barry Commoner. His talk on May 6, 1979, was curiously contemporary. He made the connection between ending the nuclear and launching the solar age. Barry Commoner is a biologist, college professor, and politician. He ran for president in the 1980 elections on the Citizens Party ticket.
The country doesn't need nuclear power. We can close down those Harrisburgs waiting to happen, those ticking time bombs right now. We can shut down, incidentally, 9 nuclear power plants just by giving up the crazy idea of producing nuclear weapons. After Harrisburg, nuclear power is too expensive to afford. We will tell them that after Harrisburg, there are going to have to be so many costs tacked on to those ticking bombs that the only way to save money is to shut them down. And we're going to tell them that there's another way, and it's wide open. The road to solar energy. Every solar technology that makes sense is now technically feasible and economically competitive. Solar collectors, photovoltaic cells, gasohol, all those things can bring the cost of energy down and show us the way to go to the sun. No form of solar energy can be turned into a huge bomb. No political fantasist or power-hungry dictator could ever use solar energy as an instrument of terror. Solar energy will never arm a suicidal war. Solar energy is peace. Politics of solar energy are incompatible with the politics of austerity. The politics of solar energy mean rebuilding the economy,
creating new industries and new jobs, raising the standard of living, restoring economic progress to the nation. That's the issue that the so-called two political parties should be debating, but they are silent. And here in the richest country in the world, do we choose poverty, austerity for the poor, and profits for the rich? Or do we commit our natural and human resources to benefit the people instead of the corporations? Are we going to build our own coalition, our own movement, so that we, the citizens of this great country, can take the power to govern this country ourselves? But that is our rightful power, our duty. Let's do it.
That was Barry Commoner, recorded by Pacifica Radio at the May 6 Rally Against Nuclear Power, held in Washington, D.C. in 1979. The rally was attended by 70,000 people who had come on only 3 weeks' notice. One reactor at the nuclear power plant at Three Mile Island had a partial meltdown only 5 weeks earlier on March 28, 1979. The overriding demand at the rally was to shut down all nuclear power plants. You heard part two of the 1979 archive production of Shut Down Nuclear Power Plants. Thanks to Celeste Wesson from WBAI and Lauren Cress Love from WPFW, who hosted the original broadcast, and to the Pacifica Radio Archives, who carefully preserved these recordings. You can hear this program again on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get information on how to order a CD of Shut Down Nuclear Power Plants, May 6 Coalition Rally Against Nuclear Power, by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free to all radio stations and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation, CD or DVD order, keeps this program on the air. Call anytime at 707-463-2654 for information on how to order. You can get your CD by mail or credit card by phone or online on TUC Radio's secure website, tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gelarden. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.